How many of you have ever met John and Marilyn? So, yeah, we have such high turnover at DRBC. Most of you have never met them or heard of them, but we're excited that they're here. Kathy and I met John and Marilyn 24 years ago. We've known them for a long time. We had such a wonderful time yesterday getting to catch up and hear what's going on in their lives. I'll tell you a little bit about them. John is comfortable on a jet ski or a trampoline. That's an inside joke. Just come and ask me later and I'll explain. But yes, John is comfortable. All kidding aside, I think, John, you're as comfortable on a 100-foot tower as you are in an airplane or on the ground. John loves that sort of thing, and he'll get to tell you something about that today. John was in the Air Force for 12 years. He was stationed here at Laughlin Air Force Base as an instructor pilot. And when their Air Force career was done, they decided to go to missions, and they'll tell you more about that. You know, all these years, Marilyn, and somehow it escaped my attention that you hold a private pilot's license. I must have forgotten that, but that's pretty awesome. But Marilyn has a lot of skills as a teacher, a coach, and so she taught at a school that's not in existence, well, sort of in existence, Amistad Christian Academy. So they introduced Kathy and me one early Saturday morning to roof stomping. Do you guys know what roof stomping is? I've heard, they told us it's an Air Force tradition. I sort of doubted that, but we thought, we didn't know what to think, but anyhow, it was crazy. Anyhow, John took his Air Force skills, his love of computers and IT, and he's using them for the Lord. Marilyn has taken her teaching skills, her coaching skills, and is using them for the Lord, and they are a super, super, super couple that I'll hope you take the chance to meet after this. By the way, along the way, they managed to raise three beautiful daughters, Rachel, Sarah, and Christiana. Rachel, who was born here in Del Rio. So anyhow, please, without further ado, welcome John and Marilyn Gordon-Flo.
So as he mentioned, 24 years ago, here's our darling little Rachel.
This is baby dedication for Rachel.
And then this summer, we celebrated her graduating from the University of Hilo in Hawaii with her pre-med degree. So it's been a while, but as you saw in your bulletin, this picture we had already picked on this slide. I don't know how they picked it for the bulletin, so it's kind of a coincidental thing.
These are Rachel's one on the left. She's the one who didn't catch up in height to me. And then Sarah decided to take all the height. Sarah also just graduated from college and is hoping to go back overseas in missions. Christiana is just starting college this year. So that's our family.
As you mentioned, I just so you get to know me, at 9 years old, Star Wars came out. And that really did change my life. It impacted my life. I grew up as a Christian in a Christian home. I had missionaries throughout my life. I gave up my bedroom many times for missionaries to come stay with us. And as a Christian, I was like, well, I really want to do something for God. And then Star Wars came out. I was like, ah, I want to go fly, fight, serve all across the universe. Wait a second. How does that work, in real life, and especially as a Christian? And a few years later, a Mission Aviation Fellowship couple came to our church and shared Mission Aviation. I was like, so I can use the passion for flying to serve God. So at that point, literally at 13 years old, I was set. I'm going to go. I'm going to learn to fly, fight, serve God in the Air Force, because that's the best flight training in the world, bar none. And then when he needs me, I'll have the skills necessary to go serve him across the globe. So we had an interesting life. As you see, I did T-37 instructing here. I did helicopters, I transitioned and flew special ops, and we raised three girls, but that comes from this lovely lady here.
Yeah, we often joke that we had, that when we were living overseas, that John lived in England for a year and a half, and I lived there for 3 years, But you all, many of you know what that means when your husbands are gone a lot. I'll give you a little bit of my history. We really believe in Mission Aviation Fellowship that you, someone comes into Mission Aviation, a couple comes on, they both need to be called. And I feel that I was called from a very young age. I grew up with a professor dad and a teacher mom. And so I, with the love of the Lord and love of learning in our house. So I really dreamed of teaching overseas. And part of that is due to the fact that my mom was taught missionary kids before she was married in the Congo for 3 years. And I used to hear stories and I thought that was really cool and kind of a romantic sounding idea. Well, I had the chance to go to Mexico at the age of 19 for a couple of months, and I got sort of a reality check on what it was like to live in another culture and wake up in the morning and speak another language and so forth. And
chilaquiles for breakfast.
Yes, I have chilaquiles for breakfast. Those were hot, in my opinion. And that's where God really impressed on me the verse 2 Corinthians 12:9, where he talks about how his grace is sufficient for me, that his power is made strong in my weakness. Whoops, sorry. But when I met John in college, I really resonated with his sense of adventure and with his love for the Lord. So I felt the whole time that God had been calling us together.
So we met in college. I co-opted with NASA. So I was going to school for a quarter and then coming working at NASA for a quarter. Great way to work through school, I agree. 5 years, but still. She went off to Spain for a year as an exchange student. So we knew each other at church, but it wasn't until that last summer that we were doing our final year together, that we kind of, God intervened. I had a friend who asked me to go to the lake on Sunday afternoon. He says, come out to the lake, we're going to ski, have a good time. And bring somebody. I was like, oh my gosh, who am I going to bring? I knew her, but I knew her as the girl who always played Ultimate Frisbee and hung out with all the cool guys, and I was not that, at least in my own mind. But it was a church, right? I went to the early service, you went to the early service. Anyway, we had between the services, there was a meeting, a breakfast type of thing, where people could interact and talk, and the crowd parted, and there she was. And I was like, oh, she would go just for skiing. You know, I don't have to worry about strings, I don't have to worry about attachments. She'll go just for the fun of skiing. That way I meet my obligation to my friend, and I don't have to worry about things. Well,
28 years later.
That was a momentous, yes. It started off a very, obviously, God relationship that has three of these beautiful daughters, and I went off to the Air Force to get my officer commission, January. I got my commission May 4th, flew back to Tennessee to get married May 6th, and then we drove from Tennessee to here for May 11th, started pilot training. So our honeymoon was driving across the country, getting an apartment over here at Gateway Apartments, and starting our life together, and then she left me.
I did, a week later. I had 3 weeks left in the school year I had to finish. It was the worst 3 weeks. But I came back. We should mention that.
Okay. And we love the Air Force. We served for 12 years. We did 6 here as a FAPE, then reassigned instructor pilot. That's where God was teaching me instructor in computer skills. And we had our lovely time here at this church. It wasn't in this building then, but I learned how to lead
church worship.
And we started off our life. Went overseas to Mildenhall, England, flew helicopters, special ops, and those are all kind of other stories that I can share. But coming back from England, we really felt God tugging at us to say, okay, it's time now. This is when I called you. This is what you need to do. And so we put our papers in, got out June before September 11th. And actually, you know, the doors to get out of the military closed really hard at September 11th. So obviously it was God's timing to pull us out of the Air Force at that time. And we came to MEF in January and were accepted. And so then we've been 15 years now with Mission Aviation Fellowship. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Mission Aviation Fellowship does is respond to disasters. And so last year at this time, Hurricane Matthew came through Haiti. And we have a base in Haiti, but this is on the other end of the island, and it was just total devastation. So I deployed with one of our communications satellite gears. It's a big inflatable beach ball, from the size from which you look at it. But inside is a parabolic dish that I can point to a satellite 36,000 miles away and have communication from space in just a few minutes. So we get there to help start when the disaster is there, to help start the relief efforts by giving internet and coordinating with the relief agencies. And then this year, I came to Florida to visit my brother. This fall season, normally we go hunting. You know, he came up to Idaho last year, we bagged an elk, we had all this good time. I said, let's go to Florida this year and hunt hogs. Well, I get there on September 8th, and guess who met me there? Hurricane Irma. So our plans to go hunt were just thrown out because we're busy trying to save his ranch and, you know, all those things. And then once that was saved, by God's grace, I mean, it was raining and raining. We flooded out, but then the second half of the hurricane was dry, and literally it parted the waters. We had less water after the hurricane passed than we had before. So one of those amazing things. But then I got the call from Mission Aviation saying, can you go down to the Caribbean? Samaritan's Purse has asked to help with relief efforts for the islands. And so we love working with other like-minded agencies, and they needed communication and aviation support. This was their first aviation type of response. So we went down to Puerto Rico to start with until Maria showed up. Then we took the planes from Puerto Rico to Granada, and then once Maria passed, getting ready to pound Puerto Rico, we flew the airplanes back into Antigua, and from Antigua we worked in Barbuda and Dominica. But this is some pictures from Barbuda, some of the devastation, and it was really, yeah, Barbuda and Antigua are one country, but they're two islands separated by about 50 miles of ocean, and the hurricane passed right through there, so Barbuda got the worst side of the hurricane, whereas Antigua survived pretty nice. But there's no power, no potable water, nothing on the island, so they can't leave people on the island overnight. So our relief efforts were started by loading up tarps, by providing water, getting generators over there for the daytime operations. But where do you start? Who do you start with? So our philosophy with Samaritan's Purse was, we want to empower the church. Mm-hmm. By helping the church can have the resources then to reach out to its community and help the community. So that gave us a focal point. We're working with the church can then work with the people, and when everything's over, there's still the support base. You know, so that was kind of our modus of operandi and the focus. So as you can see, there is a tiny cross up there. It did survive. So that was a bit of what we're doing there.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, disasters don't happen every day, except for this year. Seriously. But MAF has a variety of things that we do. And when we were talking about focusing on the church, you know, every ministry, including many churches, have a mission statement. This is our mission statement: sharing the love of Jesus through aviation and technology, so that isolated people can be physically and spiritually transformed. Focusing on that helps us know, well, where do we fit into the picture? So MAF is, you'll see that you have different colored flags there, shall we say. The blue ones are affiliate programs of MAF. In other words, they used to be run by the MAF US program, but they have now become entities of their own. And of course, that's our dream. We don't want to send missionaries. We want to raise up the national church. And that's what's happening in the blue countries, mostly in Latin America. And then you have the red ones are where MAF, am I looking correctly? MAF US is, and MAF International is in the yellow. So we're around the world, MAF is. Before you start this one, just a quick introduction. This hospital is one that we have close connection to. John used to fly into it when we lived in the Congo for 7 years. He used to fly into that at least once a week into that village. So this story centers around this hospital.
And I actually did set up the VSAT there that yes. they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. In this story, we talked about transporting someone from Kikongo, a small village, to Vanga, a larger village. But sometimes you need to go to the big city, which is Kinshasa. And this is one of those stories. This man in the picture, Dr. Lay, is really the heart and soul of the Kikongo Hospital, one of one or two doctors there. It's a very small hospital. It's a small village, in fact. And one day he was driving back on a motorcycle because it's hard to get anywhere in a car on those roads. So he was in a motorcycle, but he wanted to get home, and it was after dark, and he hit a stump, and he went flying, and he was very badly injured. So my friend Catherine Niles, who lives there still, she received a phone call at 9 o'clock at night, which is never a good thing. And they said, we need help for Dr. Lay. We know we can't treat him there. He might be able to treat himself, but no one else can. So they said, "What can you get MAF?" So she called one of the MAF pilots, and they said, "Absolutely. First thing in the morning, we'll get in there." And the thing is that he really particularly wanted to go to St. Joseph's, which is one of the better hospitals there. And she said, "Oh, who can I call to make sure there's a place for him?" She's looking through her contacts, and she realized that just recently she had met someone who was from that hospital. So she, but she thought, he's an obstetrician. I'm not sure how helpful that'll be. So she called anyway, and he said, "Oh, Dr. Lay, I went to medical school with him. I'll be glad to help. I'll do anything I can." So then she thought, how is he going to get to the hospital? And she called in MAF. She thought, well, maybe they've landed. And sure enough, the person she talked to was actually driving him at that moment to the hospital. And he was actually in the hospital for a couple of weeks. It was a serious injury, shoulder and head and so forth. And now he's back. In fact, he did a few minor surgeries with his arm in a sling. That's how important he is. But it's delightful to be part of that connections, because we feel like that's one of our roles in MAF, connecting organizations, connecting people, just like Catherine did with her phone. That's part of the connections. We were delighted to be a part of that. And John's going to tell you about WASWA.
WASWA, this gentleman, the shortest one in the front with the blue shirt. I told the guys last time the blue shirt, and it's like, oh yeah, there's like four blue shirts there. Sorry. The short one in the front with the blue shirt. At 3 years old, he was abandoned on the steps of an orphanage in Uganda. Extremely malnourished. They weren't sure he was going to live. I mean, they took him to the special baby house where he was able to get, you know, special feeding and special care. And then God, you know, miraculously brought him around, saved him. And he has now grown up through the orphanage, gone out to the schools in Uganda, got his degree, and is now back at the orphanage working as the IT guy. So last year, I happened to go teach a conference in Uganda, and I called up, I've had a long-standing relationship with this orphanage, and I said, "Who is your current IT guy? I'm here, I'd like to do some training with him," and I got to meet WASWA and hear his story. He really has a passion for his people. He's living there, he's working there. He's been sending me emails lately. I'm supposed to meet him again when I finish this trip. I'm heading on my way to Uganda again, and he's gonna be at this next conference. And he says, "I've got a business plan. I really want you to see this business plan and see how we can go forward as far as, you know, making a difference, a long-term difference." But this spring, I was able to take three more guys from MAF. Rob here is a long-term MAF guy working in radios and now in IT as well. Jarrett here is a college student whom we met at a hackathon, where we were just trying to throw out the seed, right? You know, spread the seed. We went to a university there, at Boise University, and at a conference, a technical conference, and said, "Hey, Mission Innovation Fellowship does tech. Does anybody want to do tech and have those skill sets to serve God?" He answered that call and has been was serving a 10-month internship with us. And I said, "Hey, you want to go to Africa and see what it's really like?" He loved it. So anyway, we took our team here, and then Sabato, this guy, is my national IT in East Congo, in Bunia. And another fantastic story I can tell you another time. But we were able to get out there, and we revamped the entire campus. We put in a new server. We put in a new Wi-Fi broadcast at the schools, at the classrooms. And so it was just really a neat opportunity to work side by side with my guys there in the country to keep going this idea that technology can be a tool that God uses to change lives. Sabato is in Bunia. This is what.
Yeah, so I told Jarrett, since he was 22 or something, I said, could you send me pictures? Because John's kind of bad at stopping the work to take pictures. This is the picture I receive. I don't know if you can see this, but this is what we do with our interns. We just put
them
in
the
chair.
They're
serious, yeah. And I also sent this to our safety officer. And John comes back and he says, hey, look, we roped it in.
See, right there, you can see that it is tied to the tree.
I can't see it. But honey, what were you doing in that tree?
Holding the ladder.
What was he doing?
Oh, we were actually putting up a security camera. So we had to get high enough in the tree so we could see down the long stretch and have the camera work. But this is in Bunia at the airbase, and we put up security cameras to watch the fuel sheds. And it's not that we don't trust people, but when there's cameras, it makes honest people more honest, right?
Well, there's also, I have other pictures. He likes to put antennas in trees. If they're already available, why build a tower if you can use a tree? So it's fortunate that he likes climbing.
As I mentioned, my other role, my primary role right now, is field IT support. So that means going to our field bases and helping with whatever needs they have, setting up their satellite links, making their network stronger, making their Wi-Fi work. And then my personal passion is training. So I'm on my way to Uganda. I mean, we get back on Tuesday, I change my bags, and Friday or Saturday I get on a plane and go to Uganda, where I'll spend a week with our international conference. We're bringing our IT guys from all over the world to Uganda because it's easier on visas than other places in Africa. We can get there and we spend a week collaborating. I'm going to be training with technology the second half of each day and working with Wasawa as we were before. And then from that, I'm going to Kinshasa, where we lived for 7 years. And this is totally not math that I'm going to Kinshasa. My IT guy that I lived and worked and trained with for those 7 years has hired me as a consultant to come back and teach the advanced wireless for his class that he has now started and is training his national and the national people. So he runs a class. He is able to teach the first part of the class, the basic level, but then he hires me to come in, pay my ticket and, you know, room and board and all the stuff, so that he can then have the advanced training for his guys. So again, we're trying to work ourselves out of a job by getting them to stand up and to continue on the training and the work that we're working with.
Another story, we can't help but enjoy these stories from Congo because we have such a heart for the place. But I love this picture because it gives you an idea of the heart of some of the women there in the east of Congo. In the east, you have continual conflict. You have a lot of violence, particularly against women. Well, these ladies are from the church, and they are going to be flown out to a village, and their objective is to teach the women who are there all about entrepreneurship, what they can do to raise enough money to feed their families properly and to pay for school fees. And I'm just excited to get behind something like that. But I must say, when we got on the plane, we didn't look nearly as dressed up as they do. They look pretty awesome there. But another story I was going to tell you is one that I heard recently. And just today, I found out it's now on BBC. So this story is spreading. Started in Vanga. Again, remember the Vanga hospital we showed a video about? Well, we flew in for one of our regular flights and found out that there was a huge crowd to meet them. And that's not especially unusual, but there were people with their cell phones taking pictures. And they're like, what is up with this? And there's a mom with a baby, and she was coming toward the airplane. And if you look more closely, you see there were two babies. And then the doctor told them the story. Actually, these are twins that are conjoined. And they were born in a small village, not in Vanga, a ways away. They'd already traveled to get there. But they're conjoined at the belly button. And she had the babies naturally at 37 weeks. That's a miracle in itself, right? I don't even want to think about that. But anyway, so our hope was to bring them to a hospital. Well, the doctor had already contacted a hospital in Kinshasa, and there was a team of doctors that was temporarily there who were able to separate the babies. And even their intestines were together. How do I say that? Anyway, not where they should be. And since then, they just flew them back to Vanga and then on to their village. Aren't they darling? So two little girls who can now live separate lives. And I'm just, these are the kind of stories that make me pretty excited to be a part of this organization. I can, yeah. This is a story I actually told in our most recent prayer letter. And it's also another one that excites me. It doesn't happen in Congo, it's in Brazil. Now Brazil is one of our affiliate programs, meaning that almost everyone there is Brazilian who works with MAF. They call it Asas de Socorro, which means wings of help. And in Brazil, you have, in this particular village, they had an attitude of every man for himself. There was very little collaboration going on. But missionaries had moved in, and they were teaching the Word of God on a regular basis. They were... and they could see people growing in love and care for each other. And they're excited about this, but they noticed a problem that seemed to extend for generations. And that is that when the food source, which was wild animals, moved out of the area, people would start starving, especially young children. And this was a continual problem. Well, now the answer is to build gardens, to have gardens, to cultivate gardens. But in that rainforest, it's very hard to do. I mean, just the idea of cutting a tree down, etc., is a lot of work. But remember, the attitude was every man for himself. So you'd end up with, you know, them planting around the roots of trees or whatever and doing it all yourself, because that's the way it was. Well, you know, when you move into a new culture, you try not to rock the boat of something that's unbiblical. But they begin to see this would be great if they could collaborate. So he said, have you guys ever thought of working together on your gardens? And they were immediately enthusiastic about the idea. They made a list of all the families, and they just started going down the list. And they'd clear a garden, and this person would have ownership of it. And they kept going. And there's been an enormous transformation. Everyone has a sizable garden that will feed them when there are no wild animals around. And children no longer have those distended bellies. They're doing better. So this is, to me, that's a really practical application of what God told us to do. He said to love each other, to care for each other, to work with each other. And so that's what's happening down in Brazil.
So it's the transformation of the gospel, penetrating those lives so that mm-hmm. they can allow themselves to not just be for themselves, but wait, I'm part of a bigger community. I got a bigger picture than myself. And as God expands their world, then their heart expands and they can work together. And so that's just the transformation that we get to be part of.
Yeah.
So we do want to say thank you to you as a body of Christ, of believers, who have faithfully supported us all these years. But I also want to issue a challenge to you. Do you have talents that God needs to use somewhere else in the world? And it can be anything. I know some of you guys are pilots. I've been there. I've used those skills of being a pilot and an IT guy serving God. What about you? Where's God calling you? What's He tugging at your heart to do? In Mission Innovation Fellowship, we connect people. We have lots of opportunities to teachers, pilots, mechanics, technicians of all different things. So please come out and see us, and we would love to get you guys connected. But thank you so much for being here, being faithful, serving God right here in the community that you're at.